we can call your name. Why can't you call our name? Why don't you make that little effort?
Hey friends, thank you so much for stopping by to listen. This is the Unfiltered Real Talk podcast, where we highlight Afrocentric experience with the goal of provoking deeper thinking, shifting mindsets, and inspiring change for better living. I'm your host, EJ, and I am looking forward to sharing stories together that will inspire you. I hope you enjoy the episode, and I hope you continue to do what is right and kind. Hey guys, welcome back. In today's conversation, I'm talking to Franklin Abor, who is the founder and executive director of the largest multicultural publication in the country. Now, Franklin Abor is an environmental engineer by trade, but calls himself an opportunistic creator by design. And I'll let him tell us what that means in a little bit. But I wanted to quickly introduce who Franklin is. He's been doing great things with regard to diversity and inclusion, creating a large space for people of all walks of life to come in and share their untold story. Franklin has gone on to win numerous awards for his work here in Alberta, including the Alberta Avenue's 2016 Business Recognition Award, MBCC Award for Arts and Multicultural Education Award for his work on diversity and inclusion as well. This is just to mention a few things. His Diversity magazine has been showcased on City TV, CBC, CTV, Word FM, Edmonton Journal, Global TV, and so many other media platforms. He has also been profiled in 50 Years of Impact, a biographical dictionary of Canadian of Cameroon origin produced by the Cameroon High Commission in Ottawa. Guys, I want to quickly say here that while Franklin has had this continues to have this very large and very successful platform for diversity here in our province, he had a very humble beginning. When Franklin first started, he used to record just on his phone. In fact, he had an interview with Mayor Don Iverson, who is the outgoing mayor of the city of Edmonton. And when he did that interview with Don Iverson, he actually recorded it on his phone. He didn't have any fancy gadgets or fancy cameras, none of that. He started out, first of all, only interviewing people within the Cameroon community. And then he was asked about, why don't you interview my community? And you hear him talk about that as well. I wanted Franklin to come on here and share how he grew his platform to be the largest multicultural platform across the country and how he leveraged diversity successfully to grow this private business. So let's go on over to meet my guest, Franklin.
Thank you for having me, and nice to see you're doing a fantastic job in telling our stories, especially those stories that nobody is telling. So I get the question all the time. People ask me what I mean by opportunistic creator. By the like the word itself, opportunity creator, somebody who creates opportunity for others.
Mm, that's really interesting because I was wondering, I've never heard about the word opportunistic creator before. So I was like, I got to start by asking you what
that's that why it's in brackets. It's just me. As a writer, you create words every day.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Thank you, Franklin, once again for being here. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. We wanted to do this recording before. We had some connection issues, and Franklin is back today on the show to chat with me about leveraging diversity for a successful organization and business growth. And he's been instrumental in creating a platform here in our city. And I will let Franklin get into telling us a bit about who you are. So please tell us a bit about who you are. I know that you are an environmental engineer by trade and the executive director of Diversity Magazine that you started and has just grown to do many things. So please tell us a little bit more about Franklin Abor.
By nature, I'm a writer, somebody who likes to tell stories, but I did environmental engineering at my master's degree. Then I like writing stories. So the writing part became more recognized and I started a magazine in 2012 called Diversity Magazine, which now has grown into Diversity Magazine, Diversity TV, AC Awards, Diversity Awards, and a lot of other platforms. To currently, we are the largest multicultural publication in Canada.
Wow.
And we distribute in major cities across Alberta, especially in Edmonton, Calgary, Red Deer, Grand Prairie, Fort McMurray, Red Deer, Medicine Hat, and we go as far as Toronto. We just recently launched our magazine in Toronto, and currently we are trying to expand as much as possible and go as far as we can go across Canada. So yeah, it's nice to see that some people want me to tell them some of these kinds of stories.
You know, I think it's really important that we understand how diversity can be leveraged for growth, for opportunities, for success, for organizations, and overall success of society. And that's why I really wanted to come chat with you about what you've been doing here in our province. And as you've said, you've expanded into Toronto and across. So I want you to talk about how this idea came to be, because it seems so theoretical. It seems like a huge concept. Break it down for us, Franklin, to bite-sized steps that is relatable, that people can say, oh, okay, I think I can do that in my organization. So for our Caucasian folks and for other people from different demographics that want to be more inclusive with other demographics, break it down to us how this idea came to you, how you saw that opportunity, and how you turned it into success.
So for me, as somebody who likes writing, I started doing this in my community, in the Cameroon community in Edmonton, just telling about who is doing what in the community. Later on, I realized that people started getting angry with me for not writing about them. And later on, I'm like, okay, so people are taking this serious. Then from there, I started telling stories for a bigger community, started expanding. And later on, it became Afro-Canadian magazine in 2012, just to tell the stories of the African community, because nobody was telling those stories. Then in 2014, other communities were saying the same things to that others were saying. Why come you're not telling about our stories? How come you're not including us? Now we expanded to Diversity Magazine and we're telling other stories, which is what is happening today. Other cities are asking, like the other lady was asking me the other day, are you in BC? Are you in Manitoba? We are not, but we hope to be there one day. So we always get people asking, how come you're not doing this? Or how come you're not involving us? The inclusion part, I think we as a publication, we are also in the journey of inclusion. So before, we're only telling stories for Afro-Canadian community. Now we are telling stories for multicultural communities and other people who are connected to the multicultural community in one way or another. So like every organization, it's a journey. You are constantly trying to be as inclusive as possible. And you are trying to be as self-critical as possible to include as many other persons from other demographics that are not originally part of your organization. I've been to events where somebody from the indigenous community asked, how come you didn't have any indigenous story in this magazine? Then I have to take them to the page that has indigenous story. And they were like, oh, I see. So you constantly get people pushed back to get you to be more inclusive. And now we are expanding that to other, I'll say institutions, not just organizations, because we are in connection now with so many different institutions, from the police, the fire, the chamber of commerce, and lots of other school board, trying to share different things that they are doing, thereby pushing them to do more. Because when you ask people, what are you doing? Black History Month is coming. Can we share something that you are doing for Black History Month? If they were not doing, it gets them to think about doing something in the future. Diwali is coming in this November. What are you doing that we can share? Chinese Lunar New Year is coming in January too. What are you doing that we can share? Women's Day is coming. Do you have something for women? And so on and so forth. So just the question of what are you doing that we can share, reaching out in that way gets people to do more. And of course, diversity and inclusion is strength, because it brings various expertise and experiences to the table that otherwise will not be there. So Canada has changed a lot. At the moment, about 4 out of 10 people are born out of Canada. And in the bigger cities like Edmonton, Calgary, I would say about 50% of the motor communities are all people of immigrant descent or with some immigrant connection. So it's hard to ignore that part of the population anymore. Recently, we've been very involved in the elections, going to all the major cities in Alberta to see what mayoral candidate is planning for diversity and inclusion. And we got a very good reception as far as Grand Prairie, Fort Mac. Everybody wants to talk to us what they are planning to do. Last week was Small Business Week, and we had the chance to talk to the Chamber of Commerce in Edmonton and Calgary, and they were very happy to share what they are doing for diversity and inclusion. So now is the Diwali coming in November, and after that, Black History Month in February and Lunar New Year, we are going to just keep asking more people to share what they are doing, while at the same time sharing success stories from these communities that most of the time are missed in the mainstream media. So as a publication, as a storyteller, I think we are becoming a force for good, and a force that is very, very recognizable in what it does, and sharing the stories, as we say ourselves, we share the story that nobody wants to share. So we want to stay that way and keep telling the untold stories across Alberta and expand towards Canada.
Thank you so much, Franklin, for that. You know, telling the stories, being a voice, bringing together people is strength. And in whatever capacity that we can do that, it sparks other conversations, like you said. And even for me, for my podcast, when I started it out, it was just as an example for other people, what Franklin is saying here. It was a passion for Afrocentric experience, and basically with a focus on Nigerian women, because I'm a woman, I'm a Nigerian woman. So that was my beginning platform, or that was my stepping stone. But I knew that I might have to open up my conversation to other Black communities that are not necessarily Nigerian. It wasn't even a long while I found that I have to do that, because these conversations were coming to me, just like you people were saying, well, you had been talking a lot about Nigerian women. What about Nigerian men? What about Cameroonians? What about people from Guyana? What about just Black people? And then there were people talking about other ethnic groups as well. And I found that I had to expand my scope of my podcast just a little bit, because at the end of the day, what I'm looking for is a platform where all people can come and share their story and inspire other people. It's important that I'm really glad that you said that, because I think it's something that we can look to internally as people of minority groups and see how we can come together with the dominant culture and build something wonderful. So Franklin, I want you to talk a bit about the election, because I did watch every single one of the candidates who came by to the center and talked about your plans for diversity and how they will be inclusive. I'm wondering if you can share if for the newly elected officials who will be responsible for some of the things that they mentioned in, or maybe all of the things that they've mentioned in your platform, does your center or does the magazine have any hopes of staying in touch with these officials, especially those who came to your center to speak about diversity, in a way to kind of hold them accountable or to have them speak to what they promised to do at the beginning?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think what we try to do from the connections with the candidates and all the organizations and institutions that we connect with is to have that constant network where we can always go back and ask, what is it that you're doing? Which is the question, the softest and most polite way to push people to do something or get them to think of doing something. So the short answer is yes, we have connections. We even connected with some of these candidates that who were successful in the election. Then they know that we're going to be coming back to for other things happening and what they are doing. It's a constant net communications between us and them, because that's the reason why we reach out to them, to start that ball rolling from when they were not councillors or when they were not mayors to now that they are mayors and councillors. So if something happens, or after a month or two or 6 months or a year, we can go back and say, okay, let's assess what has been accomplished so far on the diversity and inclusion side and what is planned, what you're planning to do in the future. So yeah, that's a good strategy to keep that connection and keep asking what is it that you're doing or planning to do. So it gets people to do things.
Absolutely. So I also want you to now look up to all your achievements. You know, like you said in the beginning of our show, you started out as a diversity magazine, now it's expanded to awards, to the TV, to the center, you know, to a variety of other things. So I want you to kind of look at it at a macro level and just tell us what has been some of your greatest learnings throughout this process, and also some of your challenges as you were establishing this and what you've learned from those challenges.
This is good, because I had this conversation yesterday with a group of entrepreneurs who are starting their business, because Diversity Magazine is a business, privately owned, but heavily supported by the community. And what I always share, which I shared in that event, was it's a constant process of learning. You're learning every day. And in a situation like that, you are always thinking of how can you make the most out of your resources, your time, your support, everything that you have. So from Diversity Magazine perspective, it's always been about how do we stay relevant in the face of any conversation that is taking place with a very tiny team compared to most of the other bigger media platforms. And the only way to do that has been to know where to pick our battles, to know where to focus our resources, where to focus our energy. And like you can tell, we are picking the major multicultural days or celebrations, which nobody does a media platform that way. But this means that we are at the center of the major multicultural things happening: Diwali, Black History Month, Lunar New Year, Women's Day, that kind of stuff. So being that strategic and being how to make the most out of your resources is the only way you can really be very effective for somebody who wants to make the difference, because you don't have the big resources to do broad things that everybody is doing and run to every press conference and go to interview everybody. You don't have that kind of resources. But we can be strategic. Elections, we pick some few major issues, which is diversity and inclusion, and hammer on that and get some candidates that are main players to comment and push them. Then you become relevant. So staying relevant is a major thing, and constantly evolving. Before, we're just Afro-Canadian magazine. Later on in 2014, we changed to Diversity Magazine. In 2020, we added a TV platform for those who don't want to read, they might want to watch. Now we have the TV platform every week. We have the print that goes out every quarter of the year. And we have the online that goes out every week, and active social media pages that we update all the time, and the Facebook and the website as well. So that means that you're constantly evolving into how do you reach out to new readers or new people to watch what you are doing, or new people who didn't know about you. And we are constantly going to events, covering things happening. Just being part of the major conversations and going to interview people gets us out there and puts us in the center of the conversations. And thereby you stay relevant. There's no room for complaint or for excuses about, okay, we are not a big organization, so we can't do this or that. Rather, what can we do with what we have and be the best at it? Perhaps the reason why we've gone into the largest multicultural publication in Canada, because I must also say that most multicultural publications, they focus in one city and in one group in one city. For example, if you look at the Chinese or the Indian publications, they will just be only in the Chinese community in Edmonton or in Calgary. But we are not only staying in the African community, we've gone all the way to other communities, Chinese, Indian, Arab, everyone. And we do not only stay in Edmonton, we're going to Calgary, Red Deer, Grand Prairie, Fort Mac, and now going even to Toronto. So you're constantly on the move, constantly rising and finding ways to reach out to many more people and be as relevant as possible. And of course, most importantly, be part of the conversations, whatever it is going on at that time, or creating our own conversation based on the priorities we think our communities need to know and talk about.
Wow, I'm taking a lot of notes here, Franklin. I now want to ask you if you can share with us what you think are your top three lessons for organizations looking to implement diversity. Give these organizations just overall some tips or some advice on how they can be better inclusive and how they can maintain diversity and grow diversity in your organization successfully.
Yeah, the first step always is some kind of a needs assessment, which is, does your organization reflect your clientele? If it's a city, people working in your city, do they reflect the city citizens that you are serving? It's just a basic and a very simple question. If the answer is no, the question is why not and what can you do? Who within your organizations can start championing these moves? What are the cheapest, low-cost, low-hanging fruits that you can do to increase that diversity and inclusion within the organization? Because I always stress diversity and inclusion, because you might have diverse people within your organization, but they are not included in decision-making processes. They are not included in management. How do you get inclusion? I realize that a lot of organizations hide under diversity. Oh, we are diverse. We have people from different backgrounds. But yes, are they included in decision-making process? Are they included when it matters? Sometimes even decisions-making process for diversity and inclusion are made by people who have no clue what diversity and inclusion is all about, just for window dressing. So you just have to be sincere, things that are very important. And because of that inclusion factor not being effective in most organizations are losing a lot of potential, a lot of resources that could be really, really relevant to their growth. For example, there are lots of people of immigrant descent who are sitting there with tons and tons of skills that are not being utilized. But yet, some organizations go out to find people elsewhere to do the same work when somebody right there can do it. For one simple reason, they haven't taken the time to get to know who is on their payroll or who is on their team list, who can be of use to them for the things that they can be doing. So we have to go deep to know who is there, what can they do, what skill sets do they bring. Get to know these people. Get to know how to call their names, pronounce their names, just the very basic things. Get to have conversations with them. Get to know them. Look at their resume properly and ask questions. There's a lot of waste, colossal waste of human capital in most organizations because they are not inclusive enough.
I want to talk about that just a little bit more based on my experience and what I've heard through the podcast and just within my network is this thing about names. You said get to know your names, get to pronounce your name. I know a vast majority of us immigrant people or people of different ethnic backgrounds whose names are longer and so they shorten it, or people change their name entirely to a Caucasian name. I call it the westernization of names. You know, so they changed your name because they've been told that if you do not anglicize your name, you may not get that job. People will see your long ass first name and your long last name. And next thing you know, they're going to say, no, this one is not going to be, you know, it's not going to assimilate. This one is not going to be a team player. Or maybe they don't even know English, so we're not going to hire that one. I've heard lots and lots of people say, you know, that they had to change your name. I think even our Minister of Justice, Minister Madhu, said, you know, he had to change his name to KC. Okay, his name is not KC. You know, for my Nigerian people, his name is Kelechi. But he had to shorten his name, kind of make it a bit more English so that he can kind of move forward as he started his law career in Canada. A lot of us have to do that. I want you to really dissect this a bit more for employers and for organizations to really understand that these little systemic things that are done can also prevent diversity and inclusion from taking root in their organization. And I also want you to also talk about a little bit more of what you said a little bit earlier about, are they making decisions? Are you just taking boxing the diversity in your, you know, your organization policy just so you can say, yeah, we've got diversity. We hired this person from Kenya. We hired this other person from, you know, I don't know, wherever. And so we can say we've got that. If you're not in decision-making positions, if you're not truly reflective of your organization, then you're not fulfilling diversity. Like, it's just tokenism. It's just a quota that you're trying to fulfill. So can we talk about that? Can we unpack those two things a little bit more?
So I must say, some of the people I admire a lot, like Barack Obama, Kofi Annan, they never change their names. They never change their accent. They never try to be somebody they are not. They only try to be who they were. And they were the most successful, I would say, people of African descent on the planet that I've known. So I think it's about, how do we stay true to ourselves and be the best in everything we do such that we matter? How do we become strategic and become important in whatever we do? Because if people don't want you, even if you westernize your name, the moment I've seen also people who go to interview, they said the moment they showed up at the interview was over because they realized that, okay, this person wasn't the person we thought he was.
Yeah.
So that will also happen. This way, how much you westernize your name, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think that will ever be a solution. I think the real solution is we have to really be focused on what we want to do and work hard to be the best at it so that we become very irrelevant in any conversation. We matter in every situation. People take us serious. People cannot ignore us because we are so good. Those kinds of positions, I think, are crucial to being who we want and be proud of what we have and who we are and not change things because we want to impress somebody. I don't even know anybody who becomes better by westernizing their names, but I know people become better by working hard and being the best of what they are doing and be very competitive in any situation, in any position, such that you can ignore me if you are talking about diversity and inclusion, saying, better. You have to bring me in that conversation because always pushing the buttons to get stuff done. But my name will always stay Agbo. It's not going to be anything else because that's me, which is also an important lesson for our kids to learn, to know that don't change from who you are, be you. And I think the younger generation seems to have a strong movement on that than the older generation.
Yes.
They are the ones who are not changing. They are the ones who are even keeping natural hair. They are the ones who are trying to be way more African than even the people who came from the continent. So I see the younger generation are more active about keeping to who they are than the older generation wants to westernize stuff because, but I understand those generational differences will be there. And for the with the area of organizations receiving these names, I think it's important to highlight what I learned from one workshop I attended. It was about how far the immigrant community have moved to accommodate and to acclimatize in Canada. But the Canadian community has not moved an inch to come towards that direction to meet, not even halfway in this case, to meet like three quarter towards the Canadian direction. For example, we can call your name. Why can't you call our name? Why don't you make that little effort? I've been at meetings where somebody said, oh, your last name is too long. It's too hard. I can't call it. And they just...
your last name is like four letters.
Call you by a different name or call you by something else. But it just shows the disrespect and the lack of effort to be inclusive. Nothing else. Because these are very minor things. If it's something that is important, people will learn it. If it's something that is important, people will know it. They will learn how to call it. Nobody was taught how to call the last name for Barack Obama or the first name. The people knew it instantly because they heard it over and over and over from the media, people who made the effort to call it. So I realized that if people are interested in you, they will learn how to call your name. They will learn and know about you. They will know about you and they will take you serious and they will get to know what you bring to the table. So it starts by those very little things. So I think the organizations involved have to make the effort themselves too, to know who they are dealing with, who they are hiring and what they bring to the table, their names, their country of origin, know them. In the same way, people have made that move to come close to knowing you and knowing you very well. Because the immigrant community is not asking for people to come 50-50 midway. We are asking them to come a quarter, while we've already come three quarters.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope my audience are listening today. So if your name is whatever name you have, don't bother changing it to Felicia or Michael or John, Peter. Just be proud of your cultural name. It means something beautiful and wonderful. My name means good journey. Why would I want to change my name to anything else? I don't know. And be best at what you're doing, because when you are, you will be recognized for your work. And I really, truly believe that in good faith. So Franklin, I want us to end now by you telling us about your future goals for your multimedia platform, Diversity Magazine. So tell us, what are your next adventures, say for the next 5 years or so?
Our dream now, I think, is to expand to as many provinces as possible. Currently, we are in Alberta and Ontario. We are hoping to go further to Quebec and BC, which are the two other bigger, diverse provinces that gets our attention. And we have people watching and listening and reading our stuff from US, from Africa, all over the place. But when we really talk of being in a province, we mean that we have at least a representative there, and we have locations there where people can pick up the copies of our magazines and get to know. And we have constant focus on what is happening in the province and following what is the progress in the province from diversity and inclusion standpoint. So yeah, our goal would be to spread more across Canada and have many more locations and many more people involved. And of course, get many more readers and many more viewers for our platforms, and celebrate a lot more people who are doing wonderful work in building their communities.
And also, for those who would like to partner with Diversity Magazine, can you share where you are, where they can find more information about you? If they want, maybe even those who want to sponsor the magazine, what are some other things that they can do, and how can they contact you for sponsorship?
Yeah, I think our magazine is heavily supported by the community, because we constantly always thank and highlight and appreciate the work that the community has done in supporting our magazine. All our information are on our website, diversitymag.ca, which is short form for magazine, diversitymag.ca. And most of the stuff that we always need with people to represent, we have different categories of people who support the magazine. We have people who are actual writers or videographers. We have those who are columnists. They have expertise in certain fields and they want to promote themselves into being an expert in that field. We have those we invite to our newscast to share their opinions, their expert opinion on different topics. We have those who do referrals for us, and we have people who are called brand ambassadors who do represent us in different provinces. They don't necessarily stay on our payroll, but they are representing us in one way or the other because they are our brand ambassador. And of course, we have those who actually work in our studios where they read newscasts, they write stories, they edit videos. Some of those who are doing accounting, bookkeeping. So like every business, we have people from different roles, almost every role.
Absolutely. It's a huge organization, and no wonder you guys are all across Canada and being recognized as the largest multicultural media publication. It's amazing. Thank you so much, Franklin, for being here today. It's been an honor. It's been amazing to get a bit of your time to come chat about how you leverage diversity successfully to build this huge multimedia platform in Canada, and also sharing advice and tips on how organizations and institutions can also do the same. So thank you so much for being here today, Franklin.
Thank you. All the very best. Keep doing the good work, and we'll surely meet you again soon.
Absolutely. I agree. Thank you as well. Today's conversation was also recorded by video. Please check it out on YouTube. And also, please consider subscribing at Unfiltered Real Talk Podcast. Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to the very end of this conversation. I hope that you enjoyed it, and I truly hope that inspired you. If you enjoyed the conversation, please consider rating wherever you listen, and connect with me on social media with what you enjoyed, or maybe something that you did not enjoy that you would like to see in another conversation. So connect with me with a comment and your feedback. Let's keep continuing to do and inspiring to do what is right and kind. I'll see you in the next episode.